You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others, and we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, it's about time you wrote that book you've been putting off for years, because we have a very enticing shortcut to getting published and into a store. You'll hear from an expert, plus what you need to know about the norovirus and E. coli outbreaks. And Manny the movie guy is behind himself now that, now that the Hollywood Awards season is in full swing. He'll comment on the Golden Globe nominations and more. Joining me today is a man who fought back chronic dehydration, dizziness, and a severe toilet tissue shortage to be here with you today. It's Chris Martin.
If NASA doesn't feel like there's a space race happening, they better listen up.
If you listen to this program on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a five-star review. Because, damn it, you're helping the show when you do that. The folks over there at iTunes, they read your comments, they notice your five-star reviews, they sit up, they take notice, they say, hey, that Phil Hewlett and Friends must be a pretty Hattonin show. And they stick it right there on their top five Hattonin shows page, and everybody notices. Wouldn't that be great? And you would be the reason for that happening. And you, my hat would be off to you. If I wore a hat, it would be hats off time.
I'll take mine off for them.
Very good. Thank you. Let's get things rolling, Chris. Thank you very much. Space race. What space race do you speak of?
Well, there is a space race that's reigniting in our time, which is nice, or my time, I should say, because I think you remember the original space race, Phil.
I do, sure. I remember monkeys in space.
See, that's a little bit before my time. But now, Russia's state-run news agency says that there are plans in the works for a permanent manned Russian lunar base by the year 2030, which is not so far down the road.
They're going to build a spot on the moon, and they're going to watch Earth from there.
They're going to build their own little habitat up there. It's also going to include sort of some preparations to be able to launch further missions from the moon. They're actually breaking it into three stages. So, like, at first, a rocket will go up there with a lunar lander and a staging area. And then a second rocket will go up shortly after that that's going to have advanced crew transportation systems. And then finally, a third rocket's going to come up, and it's going to carry a lunar base that they can all habitat or cohabitate out of
and
launch their missions from there.
Well, see, the private space companies like SpaceX and I forget what the rest of them are called, they're coming up with ways for rockets to land on four legs, you know, like the rockets in cartoons do and in the old 1960s space movies, where the rocket just lands and then the ladder comes out and the space guys, the astronauts, they just climb down the ladder and everybody's cool. That in reality has never been the case because there was no way to do that. But they're starting to get close, and so maybe the Russians are keying on that, and they've got some of the same technology, or they're figuring out how to do that, because you'd have to do that to land. You can get people into the space station all the time just by, you know, floating up at the same orbit. But this is different.
This is different. Yeah, you're right. You have to have a safe landing so whoever's on board, especially if they're going to be spending time there, can get off safely, can, you know, go around the area safely, can build their little huts or whatever they're going to work out of safely.
Right.
So they're also going to be searching for water, by the way, Phil, on the moon that they think can be used by the crew.
We haven't spent a lot of time doing that, have we?
I don't think so.
No.
I wouldn't imagine that there is water on
the moon. Well, remember the Apollo mission, they had dune buggies up there for a while and they were cruising around. Remember that? If it were real. It might have all been staged in a soundstage somewhere in the port of Los Angeles.
Many conspiracy theorists support that.
Right.
That it was staged. The whole thing was staged.
Yeah. So the Russians are doomed, in other words, if they go up there?
They're taking their time. That's not going to happen until, 2028 is going to be actually the first stage of the mission when they're going to send a manned space vehicle to orbit around the moon a couple of years prior to them actually launching rockets to try to safely land them on the moon.
Right, and then they'll build a base to where they could keep an eye. They could be overlords of the solar system, and they'll be able to launch interplanetary, intergalactic cruise missiles at whoever they feel. Because they'll be the first up there. That's why it's a space race. We'll want to get up there. It's now the most strategic military base in the solar system.
So you're saying we need to take notice of this action that they're taking. We need to jump on board and make sure that they're not the only ones on the moon. But it also, we're probably not going to be the only ones taking notice. Other countries that are well developed.
Yeah.
Like the UK and China.
China, and India, sure.
Yeah.
And Japan. Now, here's another way to look at it. Rather than going ahead and trying to build on the other side of the moon while they're building on one side of the moon, why not surround the moon with fully armed high-tech satellites and have those orbit the moon and just keep an eye on things?
That might be one of the things that we do. It might be one of the things that Russia does as well. Right now, I have heard a statistic that says that there is something like 20 to 30,000 satellites floating around in space already.
Yeah, and some of it's just space junk, and it's going to land back into our atmosphere eventually.
Eventually. It gets sucked in closer and closer by Earth's gravitational pull, and then one day it lands in your backyard.
Yeah, and you know, look what happened to George Clooney and what's her name?
George Clooney died.
Yeah.
And what's her name? She survived. That was a great movie, Gravity. You're talking about Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock. And she remained relatively hot throughout the whole terrifying incident.
I don't know why you had to qualify that with relatively, because I feel like she remained hot the entire time and no qualifier needed.
Okay. Now, is there a qualifier for this new version of QVC, or shopping network, that's coming out on television here real soon? What is it? What is it they're selling? What is it called?
It's called Gun TV, Phil, and you can imagine what they're selling.
Guns.
Yes, and
wow.
There is a qualifier, obviously, with many of the recent attacks that have happened. I believe that these things are spawned from a fear-based place, but possibly for good reason. Two guys are trying to capitalize on gun sales by launching a televised firearm shopping channel, aptly named Gun TV. This will be sort of like a QVC-style channel where mm-hmm. they show off the product. They offer the promotional codes and sales and put the clock in the corner that really gets you fired up about you better buy this quick or you're going to lose the sale. And then
yeah.
you can buy guns right off your television. It's going to be filmed out of Palm Springs, by the way.
No kidding. Well, so
Palm Springs,
now,
California.
What are the restrictions or regulations or anything like that? Let's say I wanted to buy a gun. Do I go through any kind of process like I would if I walked into a gun shop?
Absolutely. You have to qualify with all of the same qualifiers. That seems to be the word of the show so far, that anyone has to meet in order to be able to buy a firearm. So I think there's certain exclusions, like you can't be a felon, you can't be on the no-fly list, or at least that's one that they're working on, so on and so forth. But these guys lack sort of like a middleman. So you see the gun that you want, you call in, you say, yes, I want to purchase this firearm, and then they set it up at your local approved gun shop for you to be able to go over there locally and purchase it, because you can't ship guns through the mail.
Yeah, because then you still have to do the waiting period and the whole thing and the background check. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, interesting.
They're going to debut after the first of the year, Phil. January 20th, to be exact. And they pledged to be a 24-hour station by 2017.
No kidding.
24-hour gun sales, baby.
Yeah. Well.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Eunice, let's watch the Gun TV channel. What do you say?
And they're going to cover all kinds of topics, too. So it's going to draw an eclectic audience from a standpoint. They're talking about doing things like women's concealed weapons apparel.
Well, see, now we're talking. And
game hunting.
You know what Eunice is going to say when the husband says, oh, well, let's watch Gun TV? She'll say, anything if you'll just stop watching those car auctions.
I don't know how wives are going to feel about it. Or right now, gun sales are very popular. Will they be in 2017? Yeah. We'll find out.
You send text messages, don't you?
I do.
All right.
Regularly.
There's something you may or may not be doing, but I have a feeling you are, that tells the people who are receiving your texts that you are a complete jerk. You want to know what that is?
I call them names.
No, not that. I'll tell you what it is. Next, here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.
You know the movie The Nightmare Before Christmas, right?
Yes. Tim Burton.
Yeah. Tim Burton movie. I think most people think he directed that movie. He did not. He just produced it. The director was a guy named Henry Selick.
Now, when I think of the difference between a director and a producer, I feel like the director is the guy that yells action and cut and sort of inspires people.
It's more or less
their scenes.
It's his movie. It's his work of art. The producer is the guy behind the scenes with the money. He bankrolled the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting because you think a producer plays a pivotal role, but really they just bankroll it, don't they?
And they do a lot of the other business of the movie.
Getting people involved.
Yeah.
Getting the finances, obviously.
Getting the distribution and dealing with the whatever else, you know.
Set locations, probably, things like that.
Yeah, and probably has a word to say about this and that, but just the same. It's the director who goes scene by scene and through the edits and all that sort of thing and makes the final piece. So not a Tim Burton-directed movie, The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Though you feel like his signature's all over it, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Sort of, it screams Tim Burton, that movie.
It does. It does. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to convey the right tone when you're texting and why we've become slaves to emojis. It's why we have become slaves to emojis because they give us the right emotion, right? If you say, okay, you type something out and you say, cut it out. You just write in there, cut it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody might think you're upset.
Or, I would wonder what you want me to cut out.
Right. There. So if you used an emoji with, laughing hysterically, that softens up the sentence. And people, okay, fine, he's just joking. But if you put a steaming mad emoji, then it's, you're mad. Stop it. You're hurting me. Stop it.
Makes sense, yeah.
Okay, fine. But here's a tiny detail that can supposedly make a huge difference. A new study out of Binghamton University in New York found that when you end your texts with a period, people think you're less sincere.
Hmm.
Like if you were answering someone and wrote, sure, or glad you had fun, and didn't use a period, the person will assume you mean you actually mean it. But let's say you write, sure, period, or glad you had fun, period, and you do put a period at the end, like I just said, somehow that comes off like you're being insincere, which is kind of a weird test since both examples sound kind of cool either way. But, you know.
This is something that I struggle with because I put a period at the end of every sentence, not mm-hmm. because I'm trying to be insincere or rude, but because I have respect for the written English language. But I've noticed none of my friends use periods.
Well, here's the thing. If you really want to come off like you're telling the truth, use an exclamation point. Do you have any friends who they put an exclamation point at the end of every sentence?
I do that. I use proper punctuation to try to emphasize what I'm saying as opposed to emojis.
I use exclamation points, but then I look back and I think, okay, there's kind of a statute of limitations in a paragraph on exclamation points. Otherwise, you're just way too excited. And so three sentences in a row with exclamation points starts to look silly to me.
Yes. So you proofread your text before you actually send them out.
I try to, especially because I swipe, and the predictive text on swiping is ridiculous. Somebody should put out a book of all the poorly done. In fact, my daughter and her boyfriend were having predictive text conversations the other night where they just allowed the wrong words to be part of their conversation.
Right.
And it was hilarious. It's a fun game.
You have to be careful with that because it will often predict words you commonly use as well. So sometimes there can be an indicator hidden inside that.
Yeah. Now, the exclamation point, again, researchers found that this makes people trust you the most when you use those, and I don't understand that at all. They say it shows how language is evolving because of texting, which is interesting. We cannot rely on social cues, so we're subconsciously looking for any clues about tone, and that includes punctuation. But before you change the way you text, Chris, study was done on college undergrads. Maybe the rest of us aren't so into the hidden meaning of punctuation.
I've already changed the way I text. I've already stopped using most punctuation at the end of sentences.
Have you really?
Yeah, just because all my friends do it, and I'm in these group texts, and nobody uses it, and you just feel out of place.
Well, I tend to use less punctuation in the Twitter, because you have 140 characters, and any punctuation takes up a character.
You're trying to fit it in. But yeah. At the same time, you can lose the message if you don't use punctuation. Sometimes you need a comma or some ellipses in there.
Yeah. You know what, Twitter? I'm thinking maybe you reevaluate and don't count punctuation in your 140 characters. Talk about throwing the world off its axis, huh?
That would add a lot more characters.
I think it would. Especially when you do a lot of dot, dot, dot.
Which I do a lot of that.
But it's supposed to be three. You folks who do 15 dots, it doesn't change the... It starts to look stupid. Three dots is what it's supposed to be. Two is too few. One is a period. Three is perfect. That means continuing or, you know.
They're trying to elongate the pause. That's the whole point of the ellipses, right? It's like, yeah. I said something, yep. Pause, yeah. Here's a punchline.
Yeah. Be nice to just be able to read somebody's brain. You know, just read what they're thinking. You
think, I don't know.
Guys and ladies would get along so much better if the guys understood what the ladies were talking about, because often the ladies think that you know the context of their discussion, even though there wasn't a pretext.
Could be. Yeah. Divorce rates could also hit an all-time high. You never know how.
Oh, once we start figuring out what each other's thinking?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess there's that. Well, the brain is a powerful thing, and it's got so much power that if we were to tap into it properly, then perhaps we could start controlling the things in our lives. Isn't that right?
Sure. Yeah. And this is an interesting story out of China. A lot of interesting stories come out of there. Chinese researchers have developed the world's first brain-powered car, Phil.
How does that work?
Well, you wear a brain signal reading device that can tell the car some basic directions. For example, you can tell it to go forward, backwards, stop, lock and unlock the vehicle. So according to what I've read, this is the basic functionality of what this device that reads your thoughts and then transfers it to the vehicle can do.
Uh-huh.
Supposedly, it can select the relevant signals from the brain and translate them into controlling the car. But I don't know. The whole thing does sound like it could get you into some
trouble. Can you cut people off or brake unnecessarily?
None of that was involved in the current test and development car that I was reading about. It's not that advanced yet, but they are saying that in the future they could see this being something that blends with the popular idea of the self-driving car.
Yeah.
So maybe if you are in the driver's seat but you're not driving it, you have this device on and maybe your brain would pick up something faster than the self-driving car would.
Yeah,
I'm just
wondering, you know, if your understanding of the rules of the road are a little askew, or perhaps they are different from different parts of the world. You know, not everybody has the same driving rules. Not every country does that America does. And we notice that when people come here, they tend to do things that we don't expect. But they're accustomed to it because that's the way they drove there, even though they got the license here. It happens all the time. It's just why people think, you know, foreigners can't drive, right? Mm-hmm. That's why people think that, is because they grew up driving somewhere else where the rules are different.
Yeah, they were on the other side of the road.
Yeah,
with
many
the steering
cases.
Wheel on the other side of the
True.
Car.
True. You see these things all the time. Right of way, the whole, our system of driving is set up differently than other
Just
systems.
Miles per hour versus kilometers can confuse
all those different things. So I wonder if you have a certain brain set when it comes to driving and you think incorrectly based on where you are, will the car overrule you?
That's one thing. You know, what I thought about it, too, was the brain isn't exactly a perfect stream of thought, at least not for me. And for most people I know, your brain sort of jumps around all over the place.
Yeah.
So, you know, I picture you're in the car and your brain's doing that thing where it's like, oh, I want to listen to this radio station. Oh, there's a stop sign. Ball in street.
Yeah.
Girl in street. And then,
oh man!
And then the next thing you know, your car's jumping all over. You know, maybe
True.
You see a dog or something. And
yeah. Or it's like those bionic arms that they're making now, that they attach them to what's left of your limb, and after they connect all the nerves and everything, another connecting tissue, your brain starts to send electronic messages to that bionic arm, and you're able to pick up a ball or crack an egg or pour a glass of water. or hold a glass in your hand without crushing it. All those things that your brain can make that that prosthetic bionic arm do. Is it the same kind of technology?
Kind of technology, and I think that the technology behind it tries to siphon out the thoughts that aren't related to the activity. So it would only pick up patterns of thought that are related to the driving activity. So if you did wander off and think about something else, it wouldn't actually affect the car. But by the way, it is interesting that you bring up the bionic arms, because this idea was inspired by helping disabled people who wouldn't have to use their hands or feet to drive, which makes great sense.
Mm-hmm. You know where most people are driving these days? To the mall. Christmas shopping might actually, by the way, once you get out of your car, be good exercise. And that's important because literally nothing else during the Christmas season is even remotely healthy.
Nothing else. You're talking about food and stress.
Food, stress, sitting around drinking.
Overspending.
None of it.
Laziness.
Yeah. Depression, whatever it is. New study found the average person walks about 5 miles during a Christmas shopping trip. It's usually because it takes at least 5 hours to find anything that you need. Study also found 77% of us make up to five trips leading up to Christmas. If you're counting this, 25 miles over 25 hours, which actually is some pretty serious exercise. So how about that?
Not to mention sometimes you have to rough arm people to get to the sale.
True.
Before they do.
Give me that doorbuster. Why, you? Hey, it's award season in Hollywood, and the Golden Globes announced their list of nominees this morning. Manny the Movie Guy is chomping at the bit, or is it champing? He can't wait to be here. He joins us next with the nods, the snubs, and his picks, plus the weekend's new movies right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Next! It's time to see what the movie companies have in store for you at your local Cineplex. Joining us live is a grown man who will, I promise, be the first to admit that he's giddy like a little girl this time of year. KMIR-TV Palm Springs movie reviewer Manny the Movie Guy.
I'm always giddy like a little girl any time of the year.
Yes, but it gets even more intense this time of year, does it not?
It's my Super Bowl, that's right. It's the award season is my Super Bowl.
Okay.
So I'm very, very giddy.
Golden Globes and the SAG Awards so far, and it's just ramping up from here. But I want to, before we get into that, we're going to pause, put your giddiness in a box and seal it just for a moment.
Okay.
Give it the old, give it the Tupperware burp real quick. And let's talk about the movies that are coming out this weekend. The one, every time this trailer comes on, my youngest daughter, she has to avert her eyes because something about a giant whale in the ocean just the freaks her out. It's called In the Heart of the Sea. Is that a Moby Dick movie?
That's right. We all know and love Moby Dick, right?
Oh, he's my favorite whale of all time.
Yes. Now, director Ron Howard brings the true story, supposedly, of the Herman Melville classic tale. Now, Chris Hemsworth, Thor, stars as Owen Chase, the brawny whale hunter who meets his greatest foe, a sperm whale hell-bent on destroying the whale ship called the Essex. This one is based on the book by Nathaniel Philbrick. The filmmakers took some liberties, though, in adapting the nonfiction novel for the sake of visual effects. And visual effects you will get. Indeed, the production design of In the Heart of the Sea is worth the price of your movie ticket. But the film is only mildly resonant in its portrayal of this man versus nature tale.
No, really? So I wasn't looking for resonance. I was looking for special effects of giant whales crashing on boats.
You know, talk about a giant creature in the sea, Jaws. Jaws is still resonating decades after.
Yeah.
You know, this one I don't think will do the same.
But do they need to get a bigger boat? That's all we need.
They still do need. Yes, yeah. Definitely. Most, if you see the film, you would agree with me.
Now, the other movie that's out, and we want to roll along so we have time to get to all the awards. Now, the Big Short is being promoted, correct me if I'm wrong, as a true story about a couple of guys that uncovered one of the biggest hoaxes in American history.
You're almost right. The housing market, of course, the housing market crash of 2008 is the topic of this film, and it gets a disaster movie treatment in this tragicomic look at greed and government neglect. But central to the story is Christian Bale, nominated for SAG and Golden Globes. He's Dr. Michael Blurry. He's one of the first investors to notice the impending subprime mortgage crisis. So what does he do? Invest in our economy's failure. The other ones that follow, the characters played by Brad Pitt, Ryan Gosling, Steve Carell, great ensemble, by the way, also nominated for a SAG Award for the ensemble. They were all propelled by what Bale discovered. So what Christian Bale discovered, they all followed suit. But the whole point of this film, and I was very, very impressed with, is writer-director Adam McKay, who's famous for the Anchorman movies. With The Big Short, he has moved away from childish humor to grown-up intelligence. But this film is still funny, though. But what makes you laugh may hurt you. This, after all, is about the housing market crash.
Yeah. All right. Good. Two movies to consider this weekend, but really maybe catch up on some of the movies that made the list. The Golden Globes this morning announced, revealed their nominees. Let's go through the main categories. We're going to go about, eight deep or so. Let's start with the best drama. What do you say? Are they expected? Were there some snubs? Just run them through for us.
Okay, the best motion picture drama, the nominees are Carol, Mad Max Fury Road, The Revenant, Room, Spotlight, all movies I love. I'm expecting all of them. I'm hoping. My heart really would go for Mad Max Fury Road, but I think Spotlight will win.
You think Spotlight will win?
Spotlight, of course, is about the Boston reporters who uncovered the Catholic Church child abuse.
Right. Okay. All right. Best comedy?
Best comedy, The Big Short, Joy, The Martian, because apparently that's also comedy, Spy, and Trainwreck. This one would easily go to The Martian, I think.
Really?
Yeah, you know what? And it's kind of cool. It's kind of blessing in disguise that this, you know, The Martian is under this category because I think it will win.
You know what? Is the Joy getting kind of backhanded snub by because from what I understand, the SAG Awards didn't give anything for Jennifer, what's her name, and for the movie itself.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence did not get a nomination, and she's an Academy Award darling.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, is that because the Screen Actors Guild members, this is late in the year, maybe they didn't have time to take a look at that?
You know what? Because there's just a bunch of great performances this year.
Yeah.
I think it's, right at the end of the year, from October and on, all this film.
The Hateful Eight is another, perhaps, falling victim to that with the SAG Awards, right?
Exactly, and I love Jennifer Jason Leigh in that film.
Yeah, all right, okay. Now, moving along then, best performance in a drama.
Which one, actress or actor?
Let's go actor first.
Actor, Bryan Cranston, Trumbo, Leonardo DiCaprio, The Revenant, Michael Fassbender, Steve Jobs, Eddie Redmayne, The Danish Girl, and Will Smith, Concussion.
You want Eddie Redmayne to win, but it's going to go to the Trumbo guy, right?
No, I think it'll be Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's just his acting in that film is just so deep and raw.
I have to see that movie.
And really, honestly, can remove Will Smith here and put Johnny Depp in its place.
Oh,
Black Mass.
All right. Okay, good. How about the ladies?
The ladies. Best actress drama, Kate Blanchett, Carol, I love. Brie Larson, Room, I love the two. Rooney Mara, Carol, Saoirse Ronan, Brooklyn, and Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl. I think it will go to Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn.
Sharonan.
Sharonan. I love her. The little girl from Atonement is all grown up. It's just amazing.
I'm making notes here. We're going to keep track. Now, best performance in a comedy, male.
For male, best actor comedy musical, Christian Bale, The Big Short, Steve Carell, The Big Short, Matt Damon, The Martian, Al Pacino, Danny Collins, a surprise entry, by the way, and Mark Ruffalo, Infinitely Polar Bear, another surprising entry. So the film will go to The Martian. The award will go to The Martian because for Matt Damon. Because Christian Bale and Steve Carell will duke it out against, for The Big Short.
They'll split the vote, yeah.
Yes.
All right, Matt Damon. So for the ladies, this is where Jennifer Lawrence gets
That's
it.
Right. Jennifer Lawrence for Joy for Best Actress Comedy Musical, Melissa McCarthy, Spy, Amy Schumer, Trainwreck, Maggie Smith, The Lady in the Van, and Lily Tomlin for Grandma. I think it will go to Amy Schumer for Trainwreck.
Really? Yes. Wow.
Yep. This is the category where they always give it to really either a comedy or a musical.
Yeah.
You know, this is the category that Madonna won for Evita.
Yeah. All right. Now, if I were to skip director or supporting, which to move ahead to animated, which would you skip? Which is more important to you, director or supporting actors?
Let's do the supporting actor.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll do them. We'll skip director.
Yes, let's do the best supporting actor. Paul Dano, Love and Mercy. Idris Elba, Beast of No Nation. Mark Rylance, Bridge of Spies. Michael Shannon, 99 Homes. And Sylvester Stallone, Creed. My heart belongs to Sylvester Stallone for Creed, but I think Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies will get it.
Rylance, okay. And Stallone didn't get anything in the SAGs.
No, he didn't get anything from the SAG Awards.
All right.
Neither did Michael B. Jordan from Creed.
No, all right. Okay, now how about the ladies supporting?
The ladies, Jane Fonda for Youth. Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight. Helen Mirren for Trumbo, Alicia Vikander for Ex Machina, and Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs. I think it's going to be Jennifer Jason Leigh. This is a tough category, you know.
Yeah.
I think it'll be Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight, but Alicia Vikander is the it girl of the moment, mm-hmm. and I think she may get this one.
No kidding. She played a robot.
She played a robot, and she a very convincing one at that.
Yeah. All right. Well, if I ever have a robot at the house, it's going to look like her.
Right?
Yeah. All right. And everybody's favorite category, best animated.
Let me just predict to you what it's going to win. It's going to be Inside Out, although my heart belongs to Anomalisa.
Oh.
Yes.
Inside Out.
Yes. I love Anomalisa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, very, very nice. Well, we're keeping track because you're usually pretty spot on. You get most of them right. I think you did about 60% at the Academy Awards last year, but maybe you'll do better at the Globes than that.
The movie category.
Yes.
Ask me about the TV category at all.
Right. No, we won't do that. Who watches TV anyway?
I'm not Manny the TV guy.
No, you're not. Neither am I, but go to MannyTheMovieGuy.com and look at his video interviews with all the stars. It's always entertaining, and it's wonderful to speak with you, and we'll talk again next week.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too. All right. There he goes, Manny the Movie Guy.
Bye, Manny.
All right. He's gone. Hey, you know what? It's not unusual to say to yourself, you know something, self? I should write a book. And honestly, maybe you should. But how are you going to get that book published? Coming up, an expert on self-publishing. How you can get that kernel of an idea for a book into the stores for people to buy and make you a lot of money, by the way. Chris Kennedy joins us live next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Joining us live is the author of the book Self-Publishing for Profit: How to Get Your Book Out of Your Head and Into the Stores. It's available in our store at philhewlettandfriends.com. You should go get it. His name is Chris Kennedy, and he's here. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you, Phil?
Excellent. Even better now that you're here. You know what, Chris, for folks who haven't a clue how this works, or maybe they just believe this is a game for the big boys and folks who know somebody on the inside, so why bother? What does the old school traditional road to getting a book published look like?
The old school road definitely is something where it helps an awful lot to know somebody. You got to write your book and get it, you know, absolutely perfect. Then you got to find an agent. Then your agent's got to find a publisher. You know, the whole process, if you're lucky enough to find an agent, is going to take you at least 2 years to get your book out there.
Yeah.
And that's once it's done.
And that machinery is still out there, right?
Oh, absolutely. And people use it all the time to great success.
But
small percentage.
Very small percentage of people. And you say you can bypass that machine and go it alone. It sounds daunting to me, is it?
You know, I thought the exact same thing when I started out. You know, I looked online and there was so much information that it was overwhelming. But I was in the military for 20 years and I knew that I needed a plan. So I sat down, wrote a plan, figured it all out, you know, and got my book out there. Didn't take long and it really wasn't anywhere near as hard as I thought it was going to be.
Now, Is there a publisher, per se, involved at all, or is it just you?
Oh, it's totally me. I'm the one in charge of the editing, the cover, the book. It's all on me, which means that I don't have to wait on anybody. You know, it's something that, you know, I handle all the details, so I've got no one to blame but me.
Well, okay, there are a lot of details, so let's run through it. First of all, cost. It's if you go the old school route, the agent's going to take some money. There's still going to be costs involved. If you're lucky enough and you get a book out and people like it, the publisher might give you an advance on the next one, and you've got your costs covered. But is this an expensive pursuit, doing it yourself?
Doing it yourself, you can spend as much or as little as you want. There are some different, you know, expenses that are very worthwhile to make. For example, you want to have a cover that looks really good, but you can get that for about $300, sometimes cheaper. You certainly can pay more if you want, but, you know, you can get a high-quality cover for about $300.
You hire somebody to design that, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I do. I don't have a design background, and anything I did would look cheap, and you want it to look really good. You know, they say you can't judge a book by its cover, but everybody does.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. All right.
About 53% of sales are based on the cover alone.
Well, that makes a lot of sense then. Well, and how about, okay, now you've got the thing printed, you've got it bound, you've got a beautiful cover. What about marketing? How do people find out about your book?
Well, the best way to do it right now is social media. So, you know, you work on developing yourself a social media following, Facebook, Twitter. And when you're ready, you start letting people know about it. Actually, the best way to do it is to start talking about it several months ahead of time so you get people excited about it. Then, you know, when you put it up for pre-order on Amazon, you let all of your friends know that it's there. And, you know, is everybody going to go buy it? No, they're not. But some will. And, you know, then when it comes out, you say, hey, you know, if you liked it, how about putting a review on Amazon? And once again, will everyone do it? No, but some will. And those kinds of things are going to get you get you off the ground and get you into Amazon's marketing. And they've got an awful lot more money than I do to market. So if you can just get it, you know, get it going, Amazon will pick it up and start marketing for you as well.
Now the whole Amazon thing, I mean, is it just as simple as setting up an account and saying, okay, here's my book, let's put it up for sale? And is it open for anybody? Are there restrictions? Do you have to print a bunch and ship them off to Amazon? How does that work?
I'd love to say, you know, it's really hard, so send me your money and I'll do it for you. But no, it's really, really very simple. The process of setting up an ebook, you know, once you make your account, it's only like 9 questions that you have to answer. And one of those is, what's your title and who's the author? So it's really very easy to do. Gone are the days where you had to have a print run of 10,000 books, you know, and you're filling up your garage and, you know, you just have no space in your house anymore because you had to order all these books.
Yeah.
You don't have to order a single book anymore. It's all done print on demand.
Uh-huh.
When somebody orders a book, they print one book and send it to them.
Do you do 100% Amazon, or do you try to get distribution into brick and mortar?
It really is difficult to get into brick and mortar unless you have a traditional publisher backing you, mostly just because of the costs involved. But I do offer print copies of all of my books. I also do audio. And I have found that about 91% of my books are sold as ebooks.
Yeah.
About 6% is audio and only 3% is print.
How about that?
Yeah. And the beauty is it's online. So it's evergreen. It's never going away. If you are lucky enough to get into a bookstore, a brick and mortar store, you're only going to be there for about 2 weeks and then it's going to be gone. So,
yeah.
You know, it really isn't worth my time and effort to try and fight to get it in.
Now, let's say you get on a list, or Amazon starts marketing and taking notice because you're selling enough units that they say, OK, now you're number 125 with a bullet, and they promote you a little bit. Do the big boy publishers take notice and come a calling, or are you a pariah for starting out in your garage?
No, absolutely. You're not a pariah anymore. It used to be that you were. If you were self-published, you had some sort of stigma that the big boys didn't like. But now if you're able to get it out there and sell, you know, 15,000 copies, they're going to come looking for you. And even if they don't come looking for you, if you send them a letter, you now have some background and some street credibility that you can say, hey, look, I've already sold 15,000 on my own. Just think what we can do together. And a lot of big publishers are starting to take notice of that. And, you know, they're looking for people that have, you know, a following, whether that's, you know, social media. And if you're selling books already, they want to talk to you.
If you're selling 15,000 copies of a book in a year, are you making enough money to put a roof over the heads of your family and feed them dinner every night?
Well, you're probably making about $3 a book, so 15,000, you know, probably not quite what you'd need for a family, but that's just one book.
Yeah.
I can put out 4 books a year, so if you quadruple that, yeah.
And this year's book is going to sell copies next year.
Oh, absolutely. And every time you put out the next one, it's a bump in the one before it sales as well. You know, some of the best months I've had are when I release a new book, because not only is the new book selling, but it bumps up the sales on all of the others as well.
How many books have you published, self-published?
Books, I have 9 books, of which 8 are fiction and 1 is the self-publishing for profit.
Yeah. All right. Those fiction books are selling good numbers then, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I've sold about 60,000 in the last year and a half.
Wow. All right. Well, that's exciting. The self-book is called Self-Publishing for Profit, How to Get Your Book Out of Your Head and Into the Stores. It's by Chris Kennedy, and it's a pleasure, as always, to speak with you. It's been about a year since we've had you on. You have a website for people to visit, do you not?
I do. ChrisKennedyPublishing.com.
All right. Easy to remember. Thank you, sir, and continued success to you in the new year with your publishing, and hopefully we'll give you some competition with some folks in our audience.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. There he goes. Chris Kennedy. See, it sounds like it's something you could probably do, because there's so many printing services available to you online. You could just do something, you know, with a couple of clicks and a little bit of money. Maybe $500, $600, $1,000. What do you think? Max.
Sure. Yeah, I think first you have to have the creative energy to write a book.
Yeah, that's the challenging part.
The time it takes to, I mean, if you get, I think of myself, if I were ever to write a book, I would sit down and I'd get the creative juices going and I'd get 2 or 3 chapters done, and then the trap door of creativity would shut, and it might be 6 months before I revisit it again.
Yeah, that's the old disease known as procrastination.
Yes, and then I'd have to rewrite the first 3 chapters because I'd be in a different frame of mind when I got the juices flowing again.
I don't have to worry about it. I've actually already written 3 books.
Have you really?
Yes.
Where are they?
It's a trilogy. It's actually about how to navigate the Atlantic in a catamaran. And
kidding.
They're going to be really popular when I release them. I've decided to hang on to them for a little while, wait for the right moment.
You're not kidding.
Know? No, I'm not kidding.
Really? What's it called?
Phil, I've never even been on the Atlantic, let alone on a catamaran. I don't even know what a catamaran is.
So you don't have 3 books about navigating the Atlantic on a catamaran?
No.
All right, good.
But if anybody steals that idea, I'm coming after you.
That's it for hour one of the program. There's so much more to come, including Chris's next trilogy. Forget it. I'm not going to tell you what it's about. Including these stories in the second hour. Chipotle's CEO has a message for you about norovirus. And Dr. Kurtz joins us with what you need to know to stay healthy in light of the norovirus and E. coli, plus the ugly details about the avocado-stealing squirrel at my palatial suburban estate. Those stories and a whole lot more coming up in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour 2 of the talk show, where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes
unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. Some of the stories we have for you this hour. Did the UFC force Holly Holm into a rematch with Ronda Rousey? The six worst things you can do to your body. And the five cities with the most single female Star Wars fans. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for listening. Chris Martin is here. We'll get things rolling for this hour. Let's see, where are we on the list? Oh, yeah. Now puppy couples who are having trouble conceiving have options. Am I reading this story correctly?
Yeah, pretty much. A new groundbreaking scientific breakthrough. Researchers managed to get a dog pregnant using in vitro fertilization.
Oh, okay.
Groundbreaking, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm having trouble understanding why this is necessary, because people keep saying spay or neuter your dog because there's a dog overpopulation problem. And so here we figured out a way to increase the dog population where it doesn't seem to be needed or necessary. So help me understand why they're doing it.
Well, I'll give you a couple of reasons, Phil. First and foremost, this could be one of the keys to saving endangered wolf and fox species.
Wow.
How?
Didn't think of it from that angle, did you?
No, I didn't. We need more wolves and foxes, don't we?
Well, the ones that are endangered.
Okay.
Right? There's some of them that are, their populations are dwindling because they're hunted for their pelts or whatever. They're just not making it. And you say how, but I mean, that's obvious, right? You just end up procuring eggs and sperm from the female and male respectively.
But is it purely to make more offspring, or is there something else involved that I'm
there's not some other out? There's some other things that this in vitro fertilization process does with dogs. For example, some Labrador species are prone to getting certain cancers and certain diseases.
Yeah.
And through using in vitro fertilization, along with some like genetic manipulation stuff, you can actually start to weed those things out of the animals. You know? So you can produce dogs that have a better chance of living a long, healthy life without getting some of the common diseases that they're used to getting.
Right.
So there's that as well. These scientists ended up implanting 19 embryos into the female dog in order to get 7 healthy puppies.
Oh, okay.
See, so your hit and miss chances are a much wider spectrum than if you just put 2 dogs in a cage and say, all right, guys, go for it. Make me some puppies.
Yeah, and it's not like humans when you have 8 kids and they call you Octomom. There's if you're a dog and you have 7 puppies, that's more or less a normal litter, isn't it?
Yes, that's pretty standard, although you do have to think about the rare occurrence when they put 19 embryos into the dog, and then the dog starts to gestate 19 puppies.
Right, yes.
That's going to be an abnormal litter, and I don't even know if that's possible.
But it'll be on the cover of some newspapers at the checkout counter of the supermarket, right?
Yes.
Dog gives birth to 25 puppies.
Yeah, and doesn't survive to tell the tale.
Oh, well, hopefully it would, but can you imagine the cute photo, even if it were doctored, totally photoshopped on the cover of that magazine, that newspaper, that rag at the supermarket, you would buy it because it's cute.
25 puppies fighting each other for 8 spots on the old dinner table?
That's right, the dinner table. Where were you going? You were going to go somewhere else, weren't you?
Yes, but then I realized that this is a family-friendly show.
Yes, it is. You were going to go totally inappropriate. And say something like a farm boy might say, like teat.
Yeah, I didn't know where I was going with it. Yeah. I was just looking for an analogy for a place to sit down and eat some food.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Worked out. Dinner table.
Right.
Mess hall.
Mm-hmm. The mammalian milkshake machine.
There you go. There's a take I didn't think of.
No, neither did I till just now. All right. While we're talking about babies... Often baby names are in the, every year we get the list of the baby names, the cool ones, right? The good ones. But then there are a bunch of strange ones out there because there's a bunch of strange people coming up with names that their kids are going to have to live with the rest of their years. And so we have a list now of the most unusual baby names of 2015. Is that right, Chris?
That is right. It's actually released by BabyCenter.com, which I believe are the care keepers of all baby names that were issued to babies in 2015. They released their picks of the most unusual baby names.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, for the name to qualify, it had to go to at least 3 children, so it's that unique, at least that unique, but it has to go to at least three kids.
Okay, that qualifies it as a legitimate name as opposed to something somebody just came up with in a drug-induced haze.
Yes, if only one baby was named something, or even two, it doesn't make the list. It has to be three or more.
Okay.
The 10 weirdest names for girls this year were Chi-Chi.
We're back to the dog story.
Hephzibah.
What?
Yeah. H-E-P-H-Z-I-B-A-H.
Hephzibah. All right, go move along. I can't even
Kizzy,
say that one.
K-I-Z-Z-Y.
Kizzy. Oh, that's cute.
Mafalda, which I don't know why you'd name your
Well, I or, know. Mafalda or Mafalda? Mafalda?
M-A-F-A-L-D-A.
Because there Mafalda. Are Mafaldas out there. But that's a bygone name. I wouldn't say that's necessarily strange. I know three different old ladies with that name.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's like Gertrude.
It was probably a popular name in the 20s and 30s, maybe the 40s, but not anymore. But so now it's just a weird name.
A biblical name, Psalm, with a P.
All right, fine.
Rogue, which is kind of cool because she's one of my favorite X-Men heroes.
Yeah, but would you name a baby girl or boy Rogue?
A girl.
You think
Seems
so?
Like a female name to me.
Yeah.
I have a couple gender non-specific ones here at the end. I'll ask you what you'd...
So yeah, ask your buddies, you know, on party night. Where are you going, dude? I'm going Rogue.
The last four females is September, Swayze.
Swayze.
Twinkle and Tulip. Oh. Twinkle's different. I was going to say cool, but I don't know how long you go with that one for.
I don't know.
Before you get it changed.
It seems to me a girl with the name Twinkle is going to have an overeating issue.
Or end up on the pole.
Yeah, one of the two.
And the 10 weirdest names for boys were Aristotle.
Oh.
Bringing that one back.
Yeah, smart kid.
That old chestnut. Blade.
No.
Chap.
Chap.
How about this one? D'Artagnan.
Well, please.
I don't even know how to pronounce this one. Eustache?
Like Eustachian tube?
E-U-S-T-A-C-E. Eustache.
Mm.
Eustache.
Yeah, all right.
Inigo, which is like indigo without the D.
Inigo. Oh, that's like the Princess Bride, right?
Don't know.
My name is...
Juan Pablo.
Inigo something. You killed my father.
Now you must die.
Exactly.
How about this one? Jedi. Can imagine why that became popular.
Please.
Pi. Probably from the movie Life of Pi.
Like P-I?
P-I.
All right.
Quest.
No.
That could be cool. And finally, Xander with an X-Z at the front of it.
Yeah.
Xander.
Xander.
Xander Hewlett.
Yeah.
All right, here's two gender non-specific names. Tell me which gender you would attribute these to.
All right.
Moxie.
Boy.
Bentley.
Boy.
Yeah, that was easy for you.
Yeah, I got them both right?
Yeah, but Bentley I feel like could go either way.
I think Moxie could go either way.
That's why I said gender non-specific.
So the Jedi kid, by the way, Match.com crunched some numbers to find the best cities for single Star Wars fans.
Okay.
And
San Diego.
Yeah, and although, let's face it, if you're a chick who loves Star Wars, you'll be shooting fish in a barrel in any city, right? So they looked at how many people mentioned it in their profile, and in the five cities with the most single women who are into Star Wars, most single women who are into Star Wars, the cities, five cities, Colorado Springs, Santa Rosa, which is in California, Northern California, Salt Lake City, Portland, Oregon, and Fresno, California. So with the exception of Colorado, they're all West Coast. Well, no, Salt Lake City. Okay, fine. So you got two along the Rockies, and the other three big cities are in the West.
And neither of those other two cities are too far from the West.
True. So, guys, if you're looking for ladies who are into Star Wars, top five cities to find a guy who's into Star Wars are Orlando, Austin, Seattle, Omaha, or as they say there, Omaha, and San Jose.
So, ladies... If you're looking for a guy that's into Star Wars.
Well, honestly, ladies, feel free to look with confidence in literally every other city.
Just show up to opening day of this new Star Wars movie.
Yeah, right.
You'll be mobbed.
Yeah, yeah. All right, was Holly Holm forced into a rematch by the UFC? And the harrowing and awful story of the demise of the avocado-stealing squirrel at the Hewlett abode. coming up next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, so let me bring it back a little ways. We have a nice avocado tree in the backyard, and at one point this fruit-bearing season, there were 300 avocados on the tree.
Wow, that's a healthy tree.
Yeah, but they were the small ones, you know. They're like an inch big, and they were young. That I mean to say that they were going to grow to be full-sized avocados at some point. But then introduce a squirrel, and apparently just one squirrel, and it would just come around, usually early in the morning or late in the afternoon, walk along the block wall where the closest to the tree. Hop in there, take a couple of bites out of an avocado that at this stage of the game, they're about 3 to 4 inches long. A couple of bites and drop it on the ground and take off. And every day he would destroy anywhere from one to four avocado. Today, now I'm not complaining that there's about 100 avocados left on the tree, but 200 of them over the course of about, I don't know, 3 months or so have vanished, have become unusable, okay?
Ruthlessly pillaged by this varmint.
Yes, and it's one of those, it's not a gray squirrel, it's one of those, I don't know, is it a red? It's reddish.
Red, brown, I know what you're talking red. About, tree squirrel.
With an enormous fluffy tail, okay? Now, by all estimations, a squirrel is a cute, you know, woodland creature. But and our tree-lined street is full of enormous 40-foot-tall pine trees. A great place for a squirrel to live, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So there you
Especially when there's avocado trees.
And we've got
by.
One of those 40-foot trees in front of our house, all right? Just like almost every other house on the street does. So between the wife and I, we're getting more and more upset with this squirrel because it's sneaking around. The first time I encountered it face-to-face, I walked out and I had a broom in my hand. But hidden behind my back. And I walked out, and I'm making the noise. And somehow, in my head, I believe the squirrel likes that noise. And it's sit there looking at me like, hey, bud, thanks a lot for letting me eat some of your avocado. That's really cool of you, man. It's nice to meet you, and I'm getting close. I'm as far away from the squirrel now as I am from you. And what would you say? I'm, 3 feet from you?
3 feet.
Yeah.
Good guess.
Okay. And the squirrel's just sitting there saying, hey, cool, dude, I love your avocado, all of that kind of thing. And then next thing he knows, whoosh, I'm swinging the broom at the squirrel. And he's fast, and I think the bristles of the broom just kind of scraped up against his tail, and he took off running. Another time I encountered him, I came out there with a stick and took a swing at him and hit one of the branches of the tree, and he went straight up, as far up in the tree as he possibly could.
They can jump.
Yeah. Now, this is about a 9-10-year-old avocado tree, so I could still grab onto the trunk and shake it, and I could sway it pretty good, so I did that. The squirrel jumped, a Rocket J squirrel style, and went flying from the top of the tree down to the block wall. And can you imagine, this is a full-on parkour, is that what they call it? Where you jump off the roof of a house and land with 1 foot on the edge of a block wall? That's what the squirrel did. 1 foot on the block wall, the other 3 feet dangling perilously as it smacked the block of the wall, the cinder block, and somehow, with the strength of its fingertips, pulled itself up and took off running on the top of the wall. Never saw it again. It was gone for a good, 2 weeks. That was enough to scare the squirrel away, I thought.
You thought you had done it permanently. You had scared him away.
Now, all the time, while I was on this mano a mano mono a squirrel oh, attempt to rid the house and the avocado tree of this pest. Furry and cute, albeit. My wife, Remy, my lovely wife, who is more or less in charge of the house, has been plotting the demise of the squirrel all along. She has prepared in her kitchen, where she can see the avocado tree, a spray bottle with a pretty intense pressure nozzle of white vinegar. And on at least one occasion, perhaps two, she would go into the yard and train the nozzle on the squirrel and from a distance of maybe 5 or 6 feet, let loose a charge of vinegar. And she tells me, actually strike the squirrel at some point of its body.
So far, I like this. It sounds very humane. The idea is not to kill the squirrel, but just to...
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Bother it so much that it chooses not to return.
I don't know about squirrels and vinegar. I have yet to look up to see if there's any detrimental effect on a squirrel if it is hit or if it ingests any quantity of vinegar.
I'm no squirrel doctor, but pretty sure it's going to survive.
Okay. Fast forward a day after the last vinegar encounter. My middle daughter, Olivia, is taking our dog, Ginger, for a walk, goes out the front door, and the dog, all of a sudden, it's a little dog. It's a little, you know, it's smaller than a football, but you could probably kick it through the uprights if you tried. It has a kind of a yappy bark, but all of a sudden, it sounds Doberman-like, right? As soon as they close the door to go for the walk, and I'm thinking, whoa, there's something going on in the front yard. Let's go take a look. So I open the door, and my daughter's right there on the porch. She said, there's a dead squirrel at the base of the tree, the big 40-foot pine tree in the front, and there it is, just laying there, right at the edge of the tree, at the bottom of the trunk, right there where the roots are showing up in the grass. It's just laying there dead. I take a look at it. I don't see any nicks or scratches or blood or anything like that. It looks like it just died of natural causes, or it just fell out of the tree. Now, how often does a squirrel fall out of a tree and not survive? It doesn't seem like it happens all that often.
Almost never. I'm going to take back my vinegar won't kill squirrels comment, by the way. I think your wife might have murdered him.
You think so?
It's very possible.
Is it possible my wife is a squirrel killer?
If she got a direct hit of some real good pure white vinegar,
yeah,
could have been...
All right, now
harmful to the little guy.
I'm receiving text messages, vehement text messages from my wife right now. She says vinegar cannot kill a squirrel.
Not in small doses.
But can vinegar make the squirrel woozy while perched on a limb 30, 40 feet up in the air?
You're right, Phil. It might not have killed the squirrel, but it could have potentially blinded,
hampered,
and deafened the squirrel, thrown his equilibrium off to where actually the last however many hours he did have of life, he was probably very disoriented.
Now, you've
probably sick.
You ever get vinegar on an open sore, on a you know, a cut or a scrape,
no,
or anything like that, or even a paper cut? You get some vinegar on a paper cut.
I haven't, but I can't imagine it feels good.
No, it probably doesn't. Now think of a squirrel. Squirrels get what? They get flea bites, don't they?
Right.
So imagine she got my wife, got a direct shot to the hindquarters where the squirrels are tend to be victims to the fleas, right? Around the rear hips, that area. And maybe the vinegar got in there and it was stinging like crazy. And the squirrel sitting on a branch couldn't stand the itch and twisted around to bite and lost its footing and fell straight to the ground and landed head first. Which I don't think
it's possible. He could have been malnourished from not having any avocado for such a long period of time because you guys wouldn't let him around the tree.
So the conclusion is, then what? Is my wife a squirrel killer?
She's a squirrel murderer, yeah.
Squirrel murderer?
Yeah. Yeah, that's murder. Yeah.
Hmm. All right.
Probably for the best.
And then innocently she called the animal control people and said, well, there's a dead squirrel and perhaps, you know, maybe you guys need to come out. You know, we don't know if there's diseases or anything like that, so we're not going to handle it ourselves. I'd say it's pretty obvious that she handled it herself.
She sure did. She knew what to do. Mafia style. Mafia style.
Yeah.
I'm surprised she didn't use a blunt object and just beat it to death. I'm just giving her grief because I know she's listening. I don't think she's killed the squirrel.
You don't think so?
No.
Why do you have to backtrack? We had such a great show going.
It was good all the way up until the break. I don't want her to go through the break thinking I think she's a squirrel killer.
Yeah. All right. Here's what she says. She thinks she gave it a heart attack. And she says, please, I have so much guilt already. She said, I did get him on the flank. I didn't kill it on purpose, she says. And by the way, it was droplets of vinegar, she says, at the most.
Well, I think she probably gave it a heart attack also when it saw her stunning beauty.
Now you know how to play it, don't you? Oh, my gosh. Maybe it had the norovirus.
It's possible. It's going around.
Yeah, because maybe it said, hey, I know where else I can get avocados, over there at that Chipotle.
They have a lot of it there.
They do. And there's an outbreak that started last weekend in a Boston Chipotle, and it's the virus has popped up in several other cities around the country. And it's one of the biggest outbreaks we've had in a while. Throw in a healthy or an unhealthy dose of E. coli into the mix, and we have a recipe for healthy disaster. Health disaster, that is. What you need to know to keep yourself and your loved ones safe. Next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, we're back, and everybody's reading in the news and wondering about the E. coli and the norovirus and all this stuff. And this time, the outbreak started in Boston at a Chipotle. You know what that is? They make those enormous made-to-order burritos, right?
They stuff everything inside.
Oh yeah, or you can have it put in a tray. My wife tells me you actually get more of the stuff that they put inside the burrito if you order it in a plate.
That's if you're going for the carb-free thing?
Yeah, so without the tortillas, or you get the tortillas on the side, you just get the whole thing put in a taco plate or whatever they call it, a burrito plate, and they just put it in a bowl. There you go, a bowl, and you get a lot more stuff.
Sounds good. I'm getting hungry, actually.
But you get more of the norovirus that way, too. So has Chipotle come out and made any kind of official comment about this?
They have. Chipotle founder and co-CEO Steve Ells has publicly said that he is deeply sorry about the customers who recently got sick with cases of E. coli and then norovirus after eating at their chains in recent weeks. The company has pledged to tighten food safety procedures and ensure such incidents do not happen again. These are two separate outbreaks, by the way. The E. coli thing happened first in an area, I think, closer here to the West Coast. And then, like you said, the more recent one with the norovirus was, what was it, Boston?
It was a Boston Chipotle.
Yeah, over in Boston. And so, unrelated, although Chipotle does feel like whatever the ingredient was that was causing people to get sick is no longer in their food chains.
Yeah.
However, they didn't identify what that ingredient was.
Well, they cut out the carnitas altogether for a couple of weeks there because of the, I believe it was because of the E. coli.
Yeah, and closed something like 40-plus locations while this whole thing was being figured
now,
out.
Now, is Chipotle the only place that's getting their meat supplied from a particular place that has issues, or are there other? I mean, it seems like Chipotle is getting the lion's share of this.
Yeah, it's doubtful that they're the only ones ordering meat from whatever location has the diseases in the product, but they're probably the most famous, most recognizable. Right. So,
well, this whole norovirus and E. coli thing, it's scary. We don't know what to think, and I don't, frankly, don't know how to stay safe, and so I need to turn to an expert. So joining us live now is the medical director of Valley View Wellness Medical Center, a board-certified family medicine-type doctor, and you can find out more about the operation at vvwellness.com. My doctor, Dr. Michael Kurtz. Hello, doctor.
Hello, Hewitt and friends. How are you all doing?
Oh, great. Oh, you sound down like you have the norovirus.
No, I've been okay.
Are you okay? Good.
Oh, yeah, I promise. I'm okay.
All right. It's been a long day at work, hasn't it?
It's been a long day at work, yeah. I rushed here to talk to you.
Oh, good. Well, thank you very much.
We can discuss this.
I'm glad you have the scrubs on because we need to understand this contagious stuff. What is norovirus exactly?
See, norovirus exactly is basically, it's a virus. You know, it comes from, it's a virus. It was actually born in 1972 in Norwalk, Ohio, and that's when it started. So that was the first case, and it's also called food poisoning. because it causes food poisoning, okay? So certain foods that we eat, like raw vegetables, fruits, oysters, shells, shellfish, things like that, you also get it from touching contaminated surfaces, because where do your hands go right away? Your face.
Yeah, by the way, I just had my finger in my mouth. I pulled it away quickly.
You better go wash your hands, too, and don't touch anybody.
All right.
Keep it away from me.
Yeah.
Very contagious, yeah.
All right, so the droplets from sneezes get on a table, and how long are they potent?
They're potent for a few hours to a few days. It's
really?
Hard to tell.
Wow.
Yeah, hard to tell.
So wipe down your surfaces, too.
Wipe down your surfaces and make sure that you wash your hands on a regular basis and don't touch your face or your eyes or your mouth with your hand.
Yeah, so don't sneeze into your hand anymore. We've stopped doing that, right? We sneeze into the inside of your elbow.
Cubital fossa, which is right in your elbow. You sneeze in your elbow.
Wait, what is it called?
The antecubital fossa.
Oh.
That's a part of your arm, yeah.
Antecubital fossa.
Antecubital fossa, which is basically right by where your elbow is.
Yeah, just on the other side, the indented side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, on the inside. On the inside.
Okay, so how about symptoms of the norovirus?
Okay, symptoms of the norovirus are very similar to any other flu bug that you get. You know, you get a low-grade fever, chills, headache, muscle aches, and fatigue. And also, you get really bad components of diarrhea and vomiting.
Yeah.
And that can cause you to be dehydrated.
Uh-huh. Well, Chris, you were experiencing this over the weekend and well into the week. Did you have norovirus?
It sounds exactly like what I had, Dr. Kurtz, on Monday night. My uncle makes this really good white chicken chili. It's a conglomerate of ingredients, but he had packaged some up for me on Sunday night and put it in this container that I don't think was sealed real well. And then I ate it again on Monday night. I heated it up in the microwave and ate it again and got what I could only call food poisoning that evening, to where I had violent evacuations of what was in my body.
Yes. We're seeing this. I had a patient call me, funny, you know, last night, that her daughter, 13, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, fever, and severe abdominal pain. I told her to go to the emergency room, and she was diagnosed with norovirus. And she had a high fever, and she also had renal failure. Her kidneys and her liver were shutting down already.
Whoa.
From the virus, yes. So they sent her over to Fountain Valley and put her on IVs, and she's in the hospital right now.
So, considering that, I mean, we'll take this as the context, who is at risk of death from this sort of thing?
Risk of death, really the older population and those that are immunocompromised, because basically what you're going to be the worst is dehydrated. And what you do for that is drink lots of liquids. Liquids with electrolytes, kids, Pedialyte, like that.
Is that the only treatment then, or do you do other things? Will the virus or antibiotics work?
There's no antibiotics. No, not for this. There's no antibiotics.
Yeah.
What about Pepto-Bismol? Will that cure it?
Well, you know what? They're recommending you not use any of those products. No Imodium, no Pepto-Bismol, none of those products. They're saying hydration.
Yeah, hydration. Okay.
Those could cause more diarrhea, more problems.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we went over the best way to keep from catching it is to wash your hands frequently. Don't touch surfaces. If you do, don't put it in your fingers.
Your food should be cooked very well.
Yeah. Now, how does it get in the food supply? Is it from somebody sneezing on the food, or is it there prior?
It's there prior.
How's it getting the food?
It's there. It becomes infected with it when foods are raw.
Oh,
it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
All right. So it's just floating around, and then it plants itself in the meat, and it spreads. And then and even if you cook it, it's not necessarily dead, right?
Right. Right.
Wow.
And we're finding it all over the United States right now. Norovirus.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
In a hurry.
Do they call it the norovirus because it was found in Norwalk? Is that where the name came from?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Norwalk, Ohio.
Yeah. Nor-O.
Yeah. Norwalk, Ohio. Yeah.
Now, E. coli was not named for any particular place, was it?
It's a part of your body. It comes from a certain place. It comes from your rectal region. Okay, we won't go into that, but that's where E. coli comes from.
Yeah, we prefer that you don't go into our rectal region.
Although at 50, you're supposed to.
Yeah, right. Once in a while.
You start getting checked. Yeah, you got to get checked.
Yeah, now E. coli, now that'll get you shooting sparks out of both ends too, won't it?
Yes, it can, and it can also cause something called bloody diarrhea, which is not very good at all.
Oh, no.
And you get this also from, you know, food that is not cooked properly. You know, meat should be cooked at least 160 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
And you got to be careful. You know, you got to wash your hands also. Make sure the food has not been in contact with the E. coli, which you don't know until you make it, and you're like, whoa, how'd I get this?
Now, is this only found in meats like chicken and beef and pork, or can it be found in leafy products as well?
It could be found in leafy products. It could be found in raw milk or dairy products. That's why we have what's called pasteurized milk.
Yeah.
Pasteurized milk is heated milk, and it kills E. coli.
But E. coli in a head of lettuce, there's nothing you can do about that because you're not going to cook that to 160 degrees.
Right, right. But make sure you wash it real well and make sure that it's not infected with animal feces because that's how you get it.
Yeah. So when you buy the package and it says organic lettuce, that's the one that has animal feces.
Be careful.
On it. Yeah.
Be careful. I'd be careful with that.
Yeah. Now, E. coli easily.
A lot of those are being recalled.
Yeah. Is E. coli easily treatable?
Very easily treatable. Also without antibiotics, with basically hydration. And no Pepto-Bismol, none of those products, laxatives, no, none of that.
Yeah.
Lots of hydration. You got to drink lots and lots of liquids.
And rest a little bit.
And rest a lot.
Oh.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's very common, too, that it can go from one person to another because, of course, you have it. You go to the bathroom. A lot of times, guys, especially we don't wash our hands.
Yeah.
You go and kiss our girlfriends, our wives, shake their hands, do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from us to them.
Yeah.
Very easily spread.
Right. And elderly, young and immunocompromised, the same group.
Yes.
Potentially
same
death.
Thing. Yeah. Same thing. Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Be found in all foods. It can be found in all foods. And it can also cause severe anemia or kidney failure and can lead to death, E. coli.
Yikes.
And you get it from water. You get it from food. You get it from personal contact.
So cook your food, wash your hands, sneeze into your, what was it called again?
Into your antecubital fossa. Into your elbow, basically.
Antecubital
fossa. Inner part of your elbow.
Fossa. All right, I've written it down.
So make sure you wash your hands very well. You got to wash your hands. It's good to wash your hands for 15 seconds.
At least. It's scrubbing vigorously.
Happy birthday to yourself. Do the happy birthday song and wash your hands.
Oh. Okay, good to know. Well, happy birthday. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
All the everything. Enjoy all your festive meals and cook your food properly, please.
Cook your food properly and wash your hands and stay clean and sober and just be healthy.
Yeah. Dr. Kurtz, as always, love seeing you, but maybe I won't anytime soon.
Okay. You take care of yourself, love to the family, and God bless all of you. Okay. And happy, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Holidays.
Thank you. Same to you, sir.
Take care.
Thanks, Doc.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Right. Stay healthy.
Okay. Bye. Can you see why he's my doctor?
I can see why he has the right personality and the right temperament to be your doctor.
Right.
Yep.
And see, now he's in there cracking up our executive producer, Mike Stark. He's talking to him on the phone.
He's a good guy. He doesn't take himself or any of these subjects too seriously, although they're serious subjects.
VVWellness.com. That's where you learn more. You get, there you go. All right, so that's it for, no, we have one more segment, don't we?
We sure do.
No, the show's not done yet. Let's see. Let me just look at the list of stories. Oh, we didn't cover whether the UFC is forcing Holly Holm into a rematch with Ronda Rousey. A few other stories as well, including the six worst things you can do to your body and maybe some surprises. I have some stories here that I haven't covered yet. And we'll see if we have time. They're yours. Next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, it's Phil Hewlett and Friends, final segment. Just catching up during the break there with my buddy Chris Martin, who's here in the studio. A buddy, friend. It's not Phil Hewlett and Buddies, is it?
No.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the same flow to it.
Now, UFC, the big fight that recently happened, the fight of the century as far as they were concerned, Ronda Rousey, who everybody thought was never going to lose a single Ultimate Fighting Championship mixed martial arts fight because she's honestly probably the most badass woman there is on the planet, right?
Yeah, looking back, it seems a little overhyped, doesn't it?
Yeah,
because
Holly Holm came in there and just summarily destroyed her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dismantled her.
Now, Holly Holm hasn't been the champion for more than a few weeks and probably wanted to revel in that for maybe a few months, maybe a year or two. But there's already pressure to get the two gals back in the ring again for a rematch.
Yeah, she doesn't. Holly Holm doesn't want to revel in it by not fighting. She wants to fight for sure. But the UFC has mandated that she will have to wait until July for her next fight. And not only that, it will be against Ronda Rousey.
Oh.
So, in other words, Holly Holm goes and wins the belt, wins the title, and has to wait well over 6 months to be able to fight again. And that fight has to be the opponent that she just beat.
Now, what would she rather do? Fight one of the other worthy opponents that are out there?
Yeah, her camp thinks that she should be fighting Miesha Tate right now, who is listed as the number one contender. And their argument, they have a couple of arguments. They say, look, first of all, Miesha Tate is the number one contender. She deserves a shot at the belt in between fights. That's sort of how the system works, although Dana White will have none of that. Also, her camp doesn't believe that Rousey will even be ready to fight in July. And they don't think it's in her best interest health-wise. They say that she took a really severe beating in the last fight and ask her to come back in 7 months and fight again.
Yeah, she may be still experiencing concussive reactions over 7 months after getting beaten to the head the way she was.
Beaten to the head. She had her lip busted up so bad that she had to have cosmetic surgery in order to fix it. Actually, Rousey, who's out for a mandatory 6 months, said recently, it might be 3 to 6 months before I can eat an apple, let alone take an impact.
Yeah, let alone do the kind of work that she has to do to get in shape for a fight.
Yeah.
If you have a concussion, which I don't know if she does, but if you do, you're supposed to just lay flat on your back.
Yeah, take it easy. Let your brain heal.
Yeah.
Let the synapses reconnect.
Get fat and soft.
Yeah, which recent pictures of Rousey says that might be what she's up to.
Wow.
Holm Rousey 2, by the way, is slated for UFC 200. It will be the main event on July 9th in good old Las Vegas.
Of course, of course. All right, well, my money's on Holly Holm then, based on what you're just saying.
Yours and a lot of other people's. I think they might be setting Rousey up for failure.
Yeah. Now, direct this to Ronda. I have a list of the 6 worst things you can do to your body, regardless of whether you're going to fight in UFC 200. Researchers in Australia just finished a 6-year study of this. They studied more than 230,000 people over the age of 45. And here are the 6 main things that put you at risk for an early death. Smoking.
Mm-hmm.
It's number one. People who smoked had a 94% higher mortality rate, meaning you're 94% more likely to die early. Not getting enough exercise. 72% more likely.
Get that movement in.
Sitting for more than 7 hours a day, you're 33% more likely to die, and that's even if you exercise. Well, I think I do sit that many hours a day, because what I do, I'm sitting in front of a microphone or a computer, and most people have an 8-hour day job, and many of them are at a desk, right?
Well, get off your keister and start standing.
Sleeping more than 9 hours a night, it increases your chance of dying by 31%. People who sleep less than 7 hours only increase their chance of dying by dying early by 9%. Well, that's good to know.
So there's a sweet spot there in between 7 and 8.
Somewhere in there. Poor diet, it increases your chance of dying by 11%, but it goes up 21% if you eat like crap and you drink too much. and then drinking too much, it increases your chance of dying by 8%. But if you drink a lot and smoke a lot, then it's 180%. So there you go.
Makes Not sense. A lot. 8% by drinking a lot.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like much of a warning.
All right. I had other stories. There's a new cape that lets you avoid stage fright when you're using a urinal in a public bathroom.
Oh, yeah? What about public humiliation? I bet it helps with that.
Yeah, look at the guy with the cape. Hey, you're getting pee on your cape, dude. A naked guy carjacked a FedEx truck, but couldn't figure out how to drive it. A woman gets in a police chase because she's eating cereal while driving.
And gets in a police chase? She must have had more to hide than just the fact she was eating cereal.
She didn't want to get pulled over and written up for eating cereal while driving.
So now she's going to get evading a police officer.
Yeah. Oh, here, there's...
That could be jail time.
There's this.
This lady's Fruit Loops.
pull over, lady. Let me see your badge. Sure, lady, here it is. It says here you're Captain Crunch. When a date goes well, you'd expect there's at least a chance of good-natured over-the-pants stuff.
Yeah, a little necking.
Yeah. Especially in the Tinder era, when getting it on is the new goodbye hug.
Yes. Yeah, so
right?
We're certainly much more promiscuous.
So if you're on a good date with a woman, but she bails early, this could explain it. A new survey asked women why they would not go home with a guy after a good date, even if they really wanted to. And here are the top 10 reasons. Number one, you know, I think I need to start with that. No, never.
You always work from the bottom up.
Okay, of course, like on any date.
That's exactly right.
Number 10, I didn't shave my legs.
Okay.
Number 9.
Thank you for that, by the way.
He'll think I'm easy.
That should be number 1.
Yeah, that's old school, according to the
two. Yeah, you want it to last, so.
Yeah. I can't leave my pet alone.
Okay.
Well,
why couldn't we go back to your place?
I'm still on the verge of breaking up with someone else. I'm on my period.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to some guys, it doesn't matter so much.
That one also could be at the top of the list.
I live with my parents, and they'd know if I didn't come home.
Okay.
I hate the morning after.
Hate the morning after?
Yeah.
Oh, the walk of shame thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm insecure about my body and need to get to know a guy really well first before I'm ready to be physical.
That sounds like a legit reason.
But, babe, you're hot, and I love you.
Exactly. Let me show you how much.
Yeah, what do we say? My stomach hurts, and I didn't want to have to do that in his bathroom.
So she's a demure woman, the one that has that issue.
And the number one reason women give for why they don't want to go home with a guy after a good date.
I'm not really a woman.
That's not on the list, but we might as well end it with that. No, it's I didn't wax down there.
Ah, that's no excuse.
Yeah. That's why a lot of guys, they bring wax with them on a date.
That's it. Stick it in the microwave.
Is there any more fun than that?
Pull out the strips. Do it because you want to be a lady. That's why you don't sleep with a guy on the first date.
Good for you. We love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com or look for the blue tab on the website and click on it and leave us a voicemail. It's free. We're on Twitter at Faf Show. We're on Facebook as well. Like us, love us. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, our production assistant, Ryan Hayden, who... No, not here. Our theme song composed and performed by Russ Bonson. For Chris and all the friends, I'm Phil. Talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.